You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We'll take a glance together.
This is Equity One, Broadway's happy hour.
Pour yourself a drink and join us as we chat about life, theater, and everything in between.
I'm Elliot Maddox.
And I'm Caleb Dickey. Join us for your Equity One.
Hi, Caleb.
Hi, Elliot.
Cheers. Clink. Ooh, what a lovely amber color.
I know.
Your cocktail is. Welcome to this week's episode of Equity One, Broadway's happy hour, where we sit and chat with some of your favorite Broadway fancies. Caleb, how are you doing this week?
I am doing really well. It's my last week in Ohio, and I'm coming to New York next week. Are you ready for me?
I'm ready for you in 2 weeks, hon.
Exactly. Yes.
Can't see you until you got to do that quarantine, because I'm not trying to get sick, boo.
Exactly. I know. But excited to be there. So soon.
Oh, my God. It has been way too long. I haven't seen you actually since March.
Yeah.
And that is just the longest we've probably ever gone in our lives without seeing each other in person.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So how's the last weekend in Ohio treating you?
Good. It's a lot of packing up. We're like, I had some family time today, said goodbye to everyone because I'm not going to see him next week. So, yeah, just packing up. How about you in New York?
Oh, you know, things are good. Things are fine. Things are pretty normal.
Uh-huh.
You know, trying to stay busy and also not busy. So watching a lot of television and, resting.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I went out for dinner with Michael and his brother last, 2 nights ago, and whoa, we got really drunk.
Love that.
We went to Westville on 9th Ave, like, so good. If you haven't been, it's so, so good. Mm-hmm. But I had a lot of margaritas, and then we went to the bar next door and had another nightcap, and I think I ended up bringing a plastic cup of tequila soda in the Uber home.
As you should. Isn't there a rule now you have to eat and drink? You can't just drink?
Yeah, I mean, I ate, but it didn't really help. It didn't really help. Anyway, so back on booze today. But before we get to what we're drinking, we want to bring in our special guests from the Broadway World Series, the Chaos Twins, Nick Walker and Sasha Hutchings. Come on in.
Whoa, hello.
Hey, friends. Hi!
What's up?
Oh my God, look at all those plants. Uh-huh. Is that a washer dryer behind you?
Yes,
me?
It is.
No,
oh. Work.
Yes, that's a washer dryer.
Nope. Just a board. Yeah, in this quarantine time for sure. Thanks for joining us, friends.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you mostly for this.
Yeah, this is wonderful. I'm very excited about this.
And our audience knows that now is that time where we talk about what this is. And it's this week's Q-Cock. And here to tell us more about it is the founder of Q-Cocks, Hansel Tan, everyone.
Woo! Hey, what's up, everyone? How's everyone doing?
So good. You look like you're doing much better on a beautiful roof.
Oh my God, I'm drying off sweat. So I was helping a couple of buddies move from their apartment to one part of Brooklyn to another part of Brooklyn. So that, hence it explains why I'm at a really fancy location that is 100% not mine because she can't afford it. You know, let's not go there. But hi.
Thanks again for providing us with libations this week. What do you got for us?
So this week we have sex, lies, and deceit in the form of a bottle cocktail called a Perilicious Affair. It is a riff of the French 75 champagne cocktail. Instead, we use a Prosecco syrup with allspice with a base of pear, gin, and lots of fun in that thing. A little bit of lemon juice.
Oh my God.
I'm sold.
Wow.
I love it. Yeah. I'm so interested in like a spicy gin cocktail. Usually I go kind of like more like floral and up, like a little citrusy, but
oh, we got a little floral in there by the way of elderflower. But see if you guys
like it. All right, I'm gonna pour this in.
It tastes like elderberry juice. That's I'm about to say. Like
it's very close. Yeah.
Yeah. This is
it's the elderflower in there.
Oh.
Come on.
Well, okay, we got that. Got that garnish in there. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Clink.
Oh my God. Okay. Clink.
It kind of looks like a smoothie, like a green smoothie almost.
It's real good.
That's delicious.
Yeah, I could drink this whole thing right here, though.
This is so dangerous.
We've done it.
I'm going to.
The rule on Equity One is that it's still one if your glass is never empty. So
that's a great rule.
Mm-hmm. That's how I mix my drinks for myself at home. And
this is delicious.
There's nothing Michael's like a self-induced hangover.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. This is really, really yummy. Yeah, we like that.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's the best one yet.
There you go. Best one yet.
Before I go, I just want to say I wish you all get progressively more toasted as the hour goes along. So congrats to all of you. Big hugs and kisses, and I'll see you next week.
Yes.
Thank you, Hansel.
And if you also want one of these delivered to your door in New York City, you can follow Q Cox on Instagram. Q Cocktails, I believe, is the at. And you can order your own and you can cheers like you're drinking with us right now. Isn't this fun in this time where we can't go to bars and stuff to like be able to like actually drink something with your friends?
It's fine.
It's a good thing.
Sasha's not impressed.
I really want to go to a bar.
Oh my God. Me too. What bar are you going to go to as soon as everything opens up?
Probably, Añejo. I've definitely been there. You can drive by Añejo on 47th and 10th, and they have like a stand set up with some to-go margaritas. It's my favorite spicy margarita in the city. I love it there, and I would probably it won't feel normal again until I am sitting there like consuming spicy margaritas and guacamole.
Yeah.
Shout out to DJ.
They have the bench so you can look out on the street and like talk about people as they're walking by. I love
it's like a lunch, but now you know what? Now they actually do have outdoor seating, and they've gone like a step above. They have like plexiglass,
the dividers
between each booth out on the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you ain't getting nothing.
Mm-hmm. No, except a delicious margarita. Nick, what about you? What bar you hop into when this is all?
So there is one. There's a bar that's on the opposite side from most of the theaters. Still on that Times Square dividing line, the Long Room. And it has the best wings.
In the Long Room.
It has the best wings and the best Gold Rush ever in my life. And
what's a Gold Rush?
Yeah, what is a Gold Rush?
Gold Rush is my standard drink. And what's crazy is most bars don't know it by the name Gold Rush. They usually know it by Bee's Knees, which is fine. Like either way, but basically simple drink. I use Woodford, so it's Woodford, honey syrup, lemon juice, egg white, muddled ginger on the rock, shaken.
Nice.
Okay. Oh my God. That sounds delicious.
It's like a cold hot toddy. I mean, it's medicinal. It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, no need to have a hot toddy. You can just have a toddy.
Yes.
No. Just a normal toddy.
I prefer a cold toddy.
Me too. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I like it hot, cold, medium, all of it. Mm-hmm. I'll take any temp as long as there's Woodford.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Kayla. Caleb, now you're not in New York yet, so you couldn't get a Q cocktail, unfortunately. But what are you drinking today?
I am drinking I actually have a Yingling traditional lager. Can you see it?
Yingling, yes. You know, I love we're doing the thing. Like
this is like
the YouTubers do or whatever. Yeah.
I also love the color of your nails. That is a gorgeous color.
Thank you. It's like a robin's egg. I got them done with my boyfriend for his birthday.
Okay. Yeah.
They're beautiful. Oh my! Do you know what the specific color of that nail polish is? Because I love nail polish color names.
I think it was a sweet apple.
Mm.
See, I don't know why apple, but like, you know.
See,
it's blue.
They never make sense. They're always like, they're always like kind of right, but not really.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I'm so excited to keep drinking. This drink is so delicious. Like, I honestly can't even deal with it. Okay, so what all has been keeping you all entertained lately? Like, what are you watching? What are you listening to? What's the entertainment?
I just listened to Sasha. I'll call her up. I'll just let her talk for like... for like 40 minutes on end.
Which brings me to my entertainment, which is I just talk to these guys.
Yep.
Your plan. Exactly
right. That's gorgeous. I love that plan.
Yeah.
Now,
thank you.
Now, have you always been a plant gal, or is this like a new development?
It's not. Okay. Well, it has, things have escalated since quarantine, I must say.
I think a lot of people feel that with their plants.
Definitely. Like, I will show you, this is my fiddle leaf thing. It's a little tiny guy here on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Gorgeous.
I got that at Whole Foods right before, like, March. March. that's my sister. March, like, let's say 13th, like on a pandemic grocery run.
Yeah.
Because I was like, and it was like, it's like a nervous plant. Like, I just was like, the first thing I grabbed wasn't rice, wasn't beans, but I filled half of my cart with a fiddly fig.
With a plant. See, that's interesting. I think, you know, there's something there. There's some kind of like, it'll help me breathe, it'll help me feel normal.
I don't even know. Like, I just remember being like, well, yes, this is coming with me. And then I guess I'll head downstairs to the canned goods aisle. Like, just having a panic attack in Whole Foods and just like, this plant, though. But that's true. I have plants that I've bought after like a weird audition or like, you know, I'm just like, I don't know. I need something that can live past whatever happened in that room.
So. I love it. And all, honestly, on that Friday, who knows what food was there? The plant might have been the only thing available.
Honestly, it was like, I know I can do this for myself. And it was like $17. So $14, I think, with my Amazon Prime.
That's nothing. Oh my God, Prime at Whole Foods is it.
It's the Matrix, but we're in it.
We are, in fact.
Nick, have you
I don't feel plants? Good about it at all. I do not feel good about Amazon Prime.
It's, I mean, and you shouldn't feel good about it. Yeah, it's a deal with the devil. Let's be real. I mean, we know what it is.
It's so easy.
The mark of the beast.
It's so easy. It's the mark of the beast. Yeah, exactly. Yes. But it's so easy. That's exactly right, Elliot. Like, it is literally the easiest, and all of a sudden these products arrive, and it's, you know, your life becomes that much better. But my God.
My God.
I am not. So I do, like I said, I watch Sasha talk to her plant and I check in and I'm like, Sasha, like, this is actually too much at this point. Like, please stop. like Sasha, like, I'm worried. Like, are you okay? Like, do I need to send someone over there? Like, what's going on? And she's always saying she's fine. I don't believe it.
And then I ask my plants how we're doing and they say we're fine. And I tell Nick everything's good.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's insane.
They're fine.
there it is. But yeah, I have not ventured to the plant where I have my cat is around here somewhere. He wanders in and out of the landscape. He's probably sleeping in some crevice of this home. As he always does. And normally my wife would be here, but she just left for grad school. So she has abandoned me for education. But she's out in San Diego at Old Globe USD. Getting that theater education.
Word. So. And they're going to be
education. Don't forget.
Are they going to be in person?
So some of their classes will be, because it's only, I mean, the amazing thing is only 7 students, so they can do socially distanced classes. So I think their yoga class and their actual proper scene study class will be in person, even though distanced. But a lot of the other classes like Alexander Technique, all that stuff is going to be virtual. So that it's a little bit of a letdown. I mean, it's a letdown for students all across the nation, I can imagine. Or I can't imagine what going into a semester during this time is like. But she's excited to be there, and I could not be more proud of her. And she's worked her butt off to get here. So yeah.
That's really thrilling. But have you all ever... Go ahead, Caleb.
This is a touchy question. I think it's kind of appropriate. Mm-hmm. We'll see. OCU just announced that they're going digital all fall.
Yep.
Would you, if you were a senior this year, would you go to college or would you take a gap year? I would take a gap year because
I think I would just class. Move.
I don't know. Yeah.
Deferment. I mean, I do actually agree with you, Caleb. I think, and it's so funny because I'm actually starting. I'm probably going to be teaching at NYU in the fall,
mm-hmm.
which is going to be fun. But I was actually saying to a lot of students, like, honestly, if you had to defer this year, like, if there was ever a year to do it, this is half the fun of it is being in the community of your school, and if mm-hmm. if you're not going to get that, like.
Yeah.
Protect yourselves. Yeah.
Especially at NYU, because I feel like so much of the draw to go to NYU is that you're in the city. Like you can like meet people and go to auditions and kind of like start early. Where like if you can't do any of that, like, oh my God, save your money.
Yeah, save your money.
Yeah.
Save your money for sure. Agree.
It's a crazy time when students ask, like, what do I do? Or like, how are you? I'm like, I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing. So, and I mean, I don't even say that, like, you want to be encouraging. And I just try to, you know, say like, work on what you can on your own, but it's a really tough time. And I hope there's some, I mean, I hope that the honesty is just like, I don't know. We're in this together. This is a really tough time. There's literally no right answer. Mm-hmm. Like if you were graduating next year, I could tell you like, well, you should have these things in line and this going on and like maybe check and make sure you've got, you know, whatever lined up for yourself. But right now I'm like, I couldn't tell you what to do. I think just take care of yourself and stay sane and think about what's important to you and then act from there.
Like, mm-hmm. Lead mm-hmm. with that. Yeah.
There's wrong answer.
It's just all we have just to get through the day.
Listen, if this is all, we have though, I'm not mad about this.
I know.
That's fine. That's actually. And that's, okay
let's be honest. This was Broadway before.
Mm-hmm. So wait, I gotta say this. So I actually just did a summer camp, and there were these amazing, amazing kids, and they all. One of them asked the sweetest question. They were like, "Oh my God, what are your pre-show rituals? What do you do for?" And I was like, and literally we were given like very PC answers, but in the group there we were like, "Yo, nobody say whiskey. Nobody say whiskey." Because I'm just like, yo.
Don't tell them about the shots.
Don't tell them about the shots.
Don't tell them about the mini bar backstage.
That's exactly. I have a giant bar in my room. There's like at least $400 worth of alcohol in my dressing room right now.
You guys, when I was doing My Fair Lady and Diana Rigg, when she was playing, was it Mrs. Higgins? No, Mrs. Higgins. She played the mom.
Yeah.
So we're like, she's like, what? Like, I think she turned 80 when we were there, and this is 2018. She's a legend. We're in the room. We're having like the talk, like, you know, this is the theater. Welcome to the theater. These are the rules. Da, 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 da. Somebody says, no alcohol in the dressing rooms. There's no alcohol in the building. Like, we don't have it here. And Diana's rig was exactly your face, like Nick. And she turns to Harry Hayden Patton and goes,
I don't like that.
She smells like no booze.
I don't like that.
I was like, wow, 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 wow. Yeah, my thoughts exactly. Like, what are you talking about? She like never didn't have Viv Clo like in her dressing room. Like whether someone sent it or she had it provided for herself. Like
I was about to say, really? That's a rule at Lincoln Center?
You know,
did you follow the rule? That's the question. Like,
remember, there it was also a rule at OCU. I will say,
Sure, dry canvas. Sure.
Is that where you guys met?
All three of us. Yeah.
Yeah, we all there together.
Oh, incredible!
It was a dry campus.
Mm-hmm. It was. Caleb and I, our room got busted once.
Yes.
Yeah,
need that story.
Did you get busted in a search or in like you had a party and somebody came by? And
Triplet did come and bust the emails.
Yeah. So there was a party. Also, this was the time where I didn't drink. So I didn't touch alcohol until I was 21. Mm-hmm. So like, I mean, I was literally taking like shots of Sunkist with everyone just to like be part of everything. But we got called. They got called on us. Everyone hid everything and ran away. We ran to like another room down the hall. And Darius, right? And
was
Caleb,
in an apartment, yeah.
We're the only people. We're the only people in the room. And Darius was like, "You can't come in. No, there's no reason for you to come in." Just standing at the door, like being so sassy. And they came in and they found it was just Red Stripe in our fridge. Yeah.
Like a beer. It was my beer. It was my beer.
Yeah.
It was beer.
And there were like empty shot glasses like in the sink. Like
they're glasses. They're glasses. Like you don't see them, but they're glasses. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So there were four of us in a quad and all the other three roommates were like, "No, Elliot doesn't even drink. So this is not fair. Like he wasn't part of it."
Yeah.
But Caleb was the only one that did community service though. Everyone else.
You had to do community service?
What did you have to do?
I worked in an office answering phones. Jeez. That's what I did for like 4 hours.
Community service, free OCU labor.
Yes. Yeah, that's more what it sounds like.
That's not true. Like, were you answering like phones for like a civil rights group or like?
No, it was just
for the private university, private method.
And they're like, I was like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, try this number. Like,
oh man.
Good golly.
Yeah.
Anyway, mm-hmm. So I've dodged that bullet, but
oh yeah, see that's why
that was tough. That was tough mm-hmm. at OCU, the dry campus.
Sometimes I wish that I'd gone to a campus school. Like I really feel like there was so much that I missed out on because like at NYU, like you literally just show up in New York. You know what I mean? Like it's just like welcome to New York, and that's it, and it's like. It's a whole, the amount of trouble you can get in is that much worse because it's not like a closed community. Yeah. It's like, if you get in trouble, you're just in trouble in New York and that's just it. And you know, my buddy, but like people were trying crazy things. We had, oh my God, I think it was like not my roommate, but two doors down from me. I only stayed in the dorms the first year, but two doors down from me, there was some dude growing weed in his closet.
This is
the same dude that ended up cutting off my dreadlocks for his and taping them. This man, Zach Velasquez is his name. Zach Velasquez, you're listening. I just remembered you, and I hope that you're well. Zach Velasquez cut off my dreadlocks and taped them to his door as his entranceway door thing.
The beads?
Yeah, the beads. Exactly. Taped them. This is what we were doing at NYU. Exactly. Your face, Sasha, that's exactly right. This is what we were doing. Cut off my dreads in the middle of the night, like a sneak thief.
So, like,
No.
And like, granted, knew that I was planning. I was planning to shave my head anyway, but like, did not. Not that night. Did not ask.
Not like this.
Where,
not like this.
Gone on the door, and that was a whole thing. That was NYU. It was my freshman year.
Not this.
Not this. Not like this.
That is exactly. Too much.
Just
the middle of the night.
Why didn't you wake up? Why didn't you? Were you a heavy sleeper?
I was definitely a heavy sleeper. Also, I'm pretty sure that I was like inebriated. Like it was freshman year was bad. Freshman year was like was rough. Like not in terms of my schoolwork was fine, but like because freshman year was the year that we were actually just talking about this with a group of people. That were in my class for like my, so you guys know how the studio system works at NYU? Like,
yeah.
So the way it works is like cap.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They make the pre-existing deals with studios in the thing. I was, more classically aligned. So I was trying to, I was in Stella Adler, and then I did classical, and then I did Stone Street. And Stella Adler is like, they pride themselves on being like the studio of Brando and the studio of De Niro. And like, even though they're not at all, and I love Adler. So like, don't get me wrong. But like, we were talking about this and we were like, yo, some of the things the teachers would do to us in that first year, if they were doing these things now, there is no world in which there would not be a lawsuit on their hands. Because like, it was like the whole point the first year was to like break you. Like that was the point. I remember we had, and I'll shut up after this, but I remember we had one class where this teacher had an exercise called Going to China, and you were supposed to come in with like a story about a time that you went to China, and then he was going to do some imagination work to make the story feel real for you. So the first couple of people to go would always come in with like some sort of like, you know, we're class clowns. We're trying to do some like jackass story about, you know, like, yeah, man, I went to China and like got like mugged, and then I got stripped naked, and I had my wallet stolen from me, and like trying to be assholes, whatever. The teacher would send us out. He'd bring us back in, and it'd be complete darkness. And I was the asshole that had that story, by the way. Brought me back in. I'm like, it's darkness. Can't see anything. He's like, give me your money. I'm like, what? He puts his arm on my chest, pushed me against the wall. Give me your money. I was like, dude, what are you doing? Give me your money. I take money. Now take off your clothes. I was like, what? This man, by the end of this exercise, had me crawling naked on the bodies of my fellow students. And like, there was a moment in like, and I didn't get the worst one because there was a moment in another person's store where they got stabbed. This man poured hot candle wax onto that student's back. I'm not even joking you, y'all. I'm not safe even
words.
Joking
you.
Safe words.
Safe word is lawsuit.
And exactly. And you'd always know this teacher's class going forward, like in other, like in years above, because you'd be wandering the halls, like you'd be like doing your thing, working on your sides, whatever you're doing. And then inevitably, you just see some freshman like open the door to like his classroom and just be like crying on the floor. And then you just see like his teacher come and grab him and like drag him back in. And you're like, oh yeah,
I remember.
Shit!
Yikes!
And I'm kind of into that, though. That's a lot of fun.
Oh, it was something. It was something.
That's
man.
That's a lot. Oh yeah. I mean, you know. I think many schools have the mentality to break you down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Listen, it's a hard business. Get used to it.
Hey, you better learn. You got to learn it sometime.
Sip.
Sip. Exactly.
Look, we're on the other side. We.
Baby. I know. There's so many stories of just about surviving college.
I know.
Yes. Just surviving. Just making
I don't even know. Yeah, like because at least in New York you had reference to like the real world. Like I just think that there's like an insular sort of like culture to campus and like you don't know what the and you're going to this place at a very young age expecting them to tell you like how the world is and help you succeed. But it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
They are running their business and so they don't always have like you and your best interests in mind. Or like it's a brand that they're building, or there's just all these things that I always felt like we did this thing like OCU NYC, like coming to the city or just getting into a different learning experience outside of like your program. Mm-hmm. I think especially in the summers, like if you can work is really, really important just because it can give you perspective and just knowing that like no matter what situation, and that's the lesson you should learn is that no matter what situation you're in, no matter what institution you find yourself in, that like, that their word is not law and that like you should test everything against like your own intuition. And it's just very hard to do at a young age when you're entering the world and especially for like a career field that is as subjective as ours.
Yeah.
Because you're putting yourself under the judgment of like other people and that's why we drink.
Yeah. It's tough. And it's tough to like to educate people in the business because you can build skills, of course, and that kind of thing. And but also, you know, for using our school as an example, using OCU is like OCU can only be so in touch with New York because it's literally in Oklahoma. Like it can only offer you so much like good advice. The rest of it you just kind of have to figure out on your own. Which is like why the, you know, spring break programs getting away doing summer stock was the most valuable part of that for me.
Definitely same.
And what was it like being in school, like in New York, in the like in the center of things?
You know what? I loved it, and I will say, like, you know, all joking aside, like I love Adler, and I still love Adler, and I love all the studios I did. And I think that so much of why I loved it was because of the fact that it was in New York. And so you had teachers who were doing downtown theater and then teaching you class that night. And that was something that made all the difference to be talking to people who like knew what it is and knew what it is to do it on Broadway and knew what it was to do it on like $8.75 a week. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that I think is so important because then you also learn. I think the biggest thing, and me and Sasha talk about this on Chaos Twins all the time, the biggest thing that I try to impart to students is like theater is theater is theater, man. Like, yes, like if you want to have a career, if you want to get paid a lot or a lot to do theater, doing it between 50th and 42nd Street is a great idea, and like go for that. But like, there is the best theater I've ever seen was in the Black Box in Boston. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter totally. Where you do it. It truly yes. doesn't matter where you do it. And I think that is, there was just an appreciation of all kinds of theater that comes from being in school in New York because mm-hmm. you are encouraged to seek it out and to understand it in a way that, like, I know a lot of my friends who might have not gone to school in New York weren't, you know, that Broadway was the thing. That was the thing that you knew. And it's like, no, that's a thing. That's a really great thing, but like there's so much else happening, you know?
I think what you said, like, yeah, that's so good because back to like students asking like what to do or like how to be is the idea that like, okay, so theater isn't on pause. Like theater is happening all the time. Like, and there's so many different ways and we're being forced to find different ways to do it, which is really important when you decide that you want to be a theater actor.
Yeah.
But like the business of Broadway, like Broadway is shut down. Like doing theater in an actual like physical building, that's shut down. But the exercise of theater, I love to think of theater in like in the same way you might think of church or you might think of all these other, like there's the institution and then there is the exercise and the experience of it. And theater is really, it's about people coming together with ideas and like trying and creatively like expressing them and taking things in and putting it back out and having some, it's this whole call and response conversation that is absolutely still happening. And if you're a young person in theater, I think like even more so, you haven't been boxed into this is what it is.
Yeah.
So be creative about it. Like be creative about how you get your work out there, how you get your creativity out there, or what the exercise is for you, even if it's just writing and then, you know, dancing around your apartment. Like truly like it's an exercise to me. It's like this is the experience of what it's like to participate in it.
And go ahead.
At the basis of theater is the human experience and storytelling. Just always lead with that and you'll discover it. Like go with storytelling and how you actually feel and that's theater. You can do that anywhere.
Anywhere. Yeah. Anywhere. Yeah. I saw, I don't know if any of you saw, Irish Rep did the Weir, which is one of my favorite plays. If you've never read that play, read that play. It's beautiful and haunting and disturbing and funny as hell. But they did a virtual performance of it this whole week. They've been doing virtual performances of it. And what they did was really cool. They built a kind of a computer generated like mat. Set because it takes place in one, just in a bar. Mm-hmm. So they built the bar virtually. Sasha, kind of like what we did for Whiskeyland. They sent actors green screens, and then they like kind of blocked how they wanted it to be filmed and like where the camera is on this line and on this line, and then they edited it together. And like watching it as someone who's seen The Weir like more times than I can count, it was just as good. Seeing it like this, like they really did, because there was such care put into it, you felt like you didn't feel like you were watching a play because you weren't in a theater, but you were still getting the story.
Yeah.
And the acting was still nuanced, and it was wonderful to see. Truly wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know. Go Irish Rep.
I mean, I think that it's what's exciting is that everyone is getting very creative, figuring out a way to make things happen, because that's what we have always done in theater. Like this is what we do. We like figure out ways to do things, like be it you know, figuring out how to figuring out how to like bring a wrestling or boxing ring into an audience, Sasha, right, and Rocky, or like,
yes,
or you know, anything like that. Like, we figure these things out, and so now it's just different constraints on it. Which I think is exciting. It's also, you know, there's the phenomenon of people realizing more than ever that they can do what they want anywhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is going to make for a lot of like happy artists. I think New York might be missing a couple more people, but I do think that like people are realizing, oh my God, I can do what I want to do anywhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be in somewhere where I feel like I have to be because it's the center of things, even if I'm not happy there. So that's definitely been a phenomenon that is that we're gonna see. It's tough.
I think like it's like the structure again, like the business. I mean, we're talking about like looking at the business differently in so many ways, not least of which is race and representation and empowerment on Broadway of, you know, Black and BIPOC, like all of that. Like, what is the structure? But I think also what I think about and what we've said is like some of my most meaningful experiences were regional theater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think like one of the great things about being in New York is the concentration of talent and ideas, and that like things are can be birthed here that, I mean, you begin to wonder, could they be birthed? Could they happen anywhere else in that way? I mean, speaking to like Hamilton, like, I don't know. I remember doing it down at the Public. And I remember the creative team and producers saying, you know, we don't want to do an out of town run. Like, we want to develop this thing in New York City with a New York audience. And that says something. And I think that's valid. But then I also wonder, like, is it like, where is it a divestment of like, you know, interest and talent and being able to pay talent in other cities, like in the world, just like in the country, at least like, very involved with like Actors Equity. And I can tell you like the point of view of somebody doing regional theater in Oklahoma as like a, you know, what basically is can amount to a part-time job is very different than somebody who pays their very expensive rent in New York solely on, you know, their income from theater. And then what does that do to the things that we as a union try to like fight for and encompass?
Yeah. Or,
so it's just like, I just wonder, like you're saying, like, is there opportunity to have like more original work grow out of like American communities, like local communities that are these very specific stories, specific to town, but can maybe speak to, you know, a larger experience and be very special. And I mean, that's like an ideal, you know, an ideal or an idealistic idea. But I think of a play like Our Town, which is just like, you know, they're reviving or purported to in questionable ways. But I think of a show like that it has a very specific like place and time, and that if you can like support art in a very local community in that way, like it's not for lack of talent or interest or I don't know what the lack is, but like maybe there's a way for us to have more grassroots everything, which would include like the creation and investment in the development of theater.
My boyfriend and I talked about this, that we think regional theater is going to come back before Broadway. So like it's going to spread the talent, spread the wealth. And so we're going to have a well-rounded community, hopefully.
Yeah. I love regional theater. People are just so proud of like proud of having that in their city and in their town. And it's just such a rewarding place to like do work. And you're away from like, you know, the pressure of like everything being a multi-million dollar success. Like it's just, it's just, let's try this together. It's really fun.
No, it's gorgeous. And there's some regionals that truly know how to put actors and a company at ease. And like the first one that comes to mind is Denver Center. I will work at, I will pick up if anytime they want to call me, I'm like, let's go. Like, I don't care. I actually don't care what I'm doing. And that's just one of them. There's so many of them that I could name, but I really do feel like so much good work happens. And it's, and to your point, Sasha, I think out of, and yours, Caleb, I think out of necessity, right? Because that was the one thing that I was laughing about with my buddies, with my you know, my TV film buddies, is like, right now the two capitals of theater and film we're grounded. Like, we actually physically we cannot do anything right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the work is going to have to go someplace that's safe. And like, I know that Yellowstone is about to gear up and film out in Montana. Do you know what I mean? Like, and not that they weren't filming out in Montana before, but like they are able to get back to production because they can, their whole setup is a Western, right? So they are spread out. That's their rolling plans. You mean like that's the whole point. So like, it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of art is actually not elevated, but given a lot more room and resource right now. While the art that kind of needs the proximity, kind of it's not done. It just has to wait a second. And I think that can be helped, you know, by wearing a goddamn mask.
Just wear it.
Just wear it. I just tweeted about this morning. I had an infuriating conversation with my friend from Switzerland, who's living in Switzerland right now. Do y'all realize in Switzerland right now, masks? Nobody's wearing. The only time you have to wear a mask is when you're on a subway. Theaters are open, restaurants are open, bars are open. You can literally do whatever you. Wow. Clubbing is open. Clubbing. Wow. I was sitting there listening to this, like, are you? It's so simple.
It's so simple for just a short period of time. Like, compared to where we are now, like if we had all, like if the whole nation had just put masks on for 3 months. But I'll tell you another thing I have a very serious problem with is that we were told initially not to wear masks because they were afraid that people in hospitals, like, and they wouldn't have enough PPE. And I just feel like as Americans, we should say, you know what? You're not supposed to tell me not to do something because you're afraid we didn't put enough money and investment and time into an industry, healthcare. And you're telling me now not to wear something that's actually going to protect me and others because we didn't have enough of a healthcare infrastructure to manage all of this.
There's sorry to cut you notes because you're right. There's also in other countries, there is let's just face it. No matter what your side of the political spectrum is, there is a much larger sense of trust between government and its people and people and its government.
I don't know why.
And I don't know why either. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder, oh my God. We were a nation of slavery. Anyway, it's the elderberry, guys. It's the elderberry.
Definitely wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Gotta wash your hands.
Yeah.
But that's what's fascinating is like other countries that, I mean, granted, Switzerland was, I think founded in like 1189. Do you mean they have 600 years on us? But that said, like, it's just so messed up that we are living to this day. We are still paying for the sins of this country in our infrastructure and in just like the fact that nobody is able to.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Like, it's just disgusting.
We're young and dumb. Our country is just
young and dumb.
Yeah. I mean, it is baffling to me that it is as simple as just wearing a mask. But there is such a lack of consideration of the greater good with so many people in the country, you know, be it with like what your tax dollars go to, or be it like what you want your community to look like. There is such a like lack of caring for anyone other than
that's my dad.
Number
guys.
One.
Hey Dad.
Hi.
Hey Dad.
The other comment was that he was in the house, but he'd be quiet because he has trolled us. Mm-hmm. He's trolled me. I'll say me.
Yeah, he has trolled you on Chaos Twins.
On Chaos Twins.
Yeah.
Hi, Dad.
That does happen.
But we love a troll.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is so funny.
But what you're saying, even like the greater good, we are not founded on the greater good.
No.
Of the individual, we are, but not the community.
And that's the issue. That's the issue. And
that's we don't know how to do this.
Yeah. It's so funny. Like in World War II, we were all on board to like, you know, end the war. You have your victory garden. But like, why didn't they teach us to make our own masks? Like, here's how you make a mask. So we'll save other masks. Like,
it was politicized.
I don't know.
It's the detriment of our entire country. It was politicized. And it was one of those things that it didn't need to be. But again, the greater good of one. It was politicized for the greater good of one apex of a human.
Yep.
In the White House, what he thought would be his greater good. I'm hoping that it will be the downfall, to be honest. But because it's just beyond politics. Like we have the capacity to be so much better than this, and it would be interesting if it wasn't terrifying to watch people cling to their narrative of the past 4 years.
Yes.
Yeah. I've also, and I don't know how you guys
or feel about however many we've been a country. Sorry, go ahead.
No. It's 4 years is about right.
It's like 4 years. Wait, or 400. Like, sorry.
In between one of those, you'll find the correct answer. But it's fascinating. I was just having this conversation. The idea that I've in order to keep my fight up, in order to keep pushing for the rights of everyone in this country. You truly have to let go of the idea that you will see that progress happen. That is both the saddest part and the best thing you can do. Sasha, we've talked about this. I think about my mother who is so confused after everything that she put into the civil rights movement, why this is still a thing.
Wow. Yeah.
Why we're still here. And not just for Black people, but for everyone who's got a struggle in this country, our LGBTQ brothers and sisters, like everybody who's got a struggle in this country, why are we still here? People have died. That should be it. That's enough. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And yet we're still here.
It's never been enough.
It's never been enough.
Look at, we talk, I think about this all the time, but
yeah.
But you know, you think about Columbine,
yes.
You think about Parkland, you think about all these schools where children, you know, the one part of the thing about quarantine was that there haven't been any school shootings. And it's like what this constantly happening, like what, and but there's still nothing being done because of a lie that people have been told that if you regulate guns, you're going against the Constitution. And it's just not the case. Yeah. But again, it's that I want guns. Me, I want them to feel powerful. I want them. And it's not about that. It's unfortunately, I don't know when it's going to change. And you're right. It's a sobering thing to think about, but will we see it?
But again, in that I find that it's like you have to, it just comes down to you don't fight because you're going to see the end of it. You fight because it's the right thing to do.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. It's like, I know that my time on this earth was spent trying to make space for everyone. And that's literally all I can say. Yeah. And the rest of it's like, okay, sure. Like, you know, and I hope that I'm proven wrong. I really do. But I just, I'm like, this is, it's so deeply entrenched in who this country is that I don't know if it changes in our lifetime. I think it maybe in the next lifetime, but I don't know if it's ours. And that's really daunting, but also like, great, I'll keep fighting, you know? Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I'm really inspired by the generation under us and how much they know already.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't realize until too late that it was important to have a voice and fight for people and pay attention. I didn't realize that because I feel like we grew up in a generation where we were like, no, it's going to be great. See, we worked hard. We have a life and you can do the same and you can work hard and you can have a nice life. And we kind of like did that. And then we were like, oh wait, but there's so much against us that I actually don't think we can.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had to realize it, but the generation under us knows. They know that they're fucked. Like they just know. So it's a matter of they're louder about
it. Seen enough. I was like listening to this podcast or NPR. It was like an NPR podcast. They were talking about the financial crisis and they were talking about millennials, us. And they were like, see that like when we were like, I don't know, in our like formative years of like childhood, there was the 9/11.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then there was as we were entering the workforce or starting to, we had the financial crisis of like 2008, like the beginnings of that and the fallout. And then now as we're like gaining our momentum and like got those of us who were able to get our feet underneath us who aren't living at home, because there's a lot of our like, who were already living at home before this. And now we have like a pandemic and another financial crisis. But I think, and then in the middle of that, like school shootings, like thinking about what that did to like my understanding. I remember Columbine, and I can't remember what year it was, but I remember being young and thinking like, because you're still watching. You're watching to see what the adults are going to do, and they don't do anything. But then you look at like, we didn't do what those kids in Marjorie Douglas,
in Florida,
we didn't do what those kids did. Yeah. Like, I think that they've seen even more. And so I'm inspired. I'm like hesitant too, because I'm just like, well, like it's easy to look to the next generation and be like, you guys fix it, please. Yeah. So I just want to like sort of as a bridge, be like a resource and like, and there, you know, but I agree, Elliot, like, I think that, or that they are like, I don't know, maybe I'm hoping that they're in like this, like sort of sweet spot of like having seen a lot, but having not like been sold sort of the lie that we,
I don't think it's too late for them.
No,
like I think that like, for millennials, it's a little too late. I think that we tried.
We can keep the fight going, but we can't.
I know, but
we took some punches, though. We took some
took all of the punches, and I do think we tried, but I do think that who's really going to reap the benefits is the generation underneath us and the next. And they deserve it, too, because they are really badass.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, what we can do is we can, I do think that one thing this pandemic has done is like, we have stuck together. I will say that. And I think that even though we know we're not going to ever be able to stop fighting for these things, I think there is a comfort that I take in knowing that like, I'm walking out of this knowing that several people have my back.
Yes.
And that is, there's several more people than I had going into this. And that's huge. That makes me feel like, okay, we can do some damage. We can take some stuff down before we're out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man.
Well.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We want to get to like our actual interview, LOL.
I was just thinking, I was like, you guys have like totally have questions. And we were just like, yeah, so this is where I'm at. So I'm thinking about.
No, this is what we do. If we were doing Broadway shows right now and meeting for drinks between, this is what we'd be talking about,
totally,
right?
Totally.
You know what I mean? This is what's on our mind. This is what we want to knock around with.
Yeah.
But we do like to ask all of our guests what first got them interested in the arts when they were a young person. Mm-hmm. So Sasha, let's start with you. What first got Sasha interested in the arts?
I was put into dance at 3 years old, like every little good girl is. and I always say like I just never stopped. And I think what sort of kept me going, I think I realized like, I was always dancing, and I think in my body, I sort of realized that like this is a way for me to communicate things that I didn't understand at a very young age. And I don't think I realized that until like literally like a week ago. But but I think that it was like I was hooked on this process of like things are happening. I don't know what to do with this energy, but I can move and I can make something beautiful with it. And then of course, like teachers who encouraged me and, you know, singled me out and parents who were supportive and just like continue, what do you want to do? go for it. I never felt like, you know, they were like, well, you're going to have to get a real job. I never had that message from my parents. Yeah. And then I just literally, it was just, I think it was that dance and like realizing that, like, as even though like there are emotions that I can't articulate and maybe haven't even fully experienced yet, but I can experiment and play with those things physically with my body, was really powerful and sort of addictive for me. Yeah. And I've just sort of followed the trail of like any breadcrumb that anyone would leave me since. Like, I've just college, everything. One of my studio directors, who's since passed, but Pam Olarzyk, like, she gave me the brochure for OCU and was like, you're going here. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't even know if I want to dance. And I remember taking master classes like in New York. She would organize trips and they'd be like, who wants to be on Broadway? And I would just be like, do skew skew do. And she was like, she does. And I was like, I don't even know what this is. Like, we just had people who like saw something. I think teachers are incredible because they have the ability to see something in you and plant something in you and facilitate something that you don't even know you want for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but really, yeah, I'm addicted to the like ability to take something and process it in other artistic ways, creative ways, and create something really cool in the process.
Yes.
Yeah. I relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
What about you, Nick?
No, I think it's similar and different. I think, so, I mean, I know my mom put me into theater because I had ADD and she thought it was focus me.
Yeah. Like, it would like Tale's oldest time.
Tale's oldest time. And it worked. And it did work. Like, I mean, it was, and to my chagrin, like, it became the thing that I focused on, the storytelling. But also when I was young, my babysitters were movies and books. And I was watching movies that I should not have been watching at that age. At all. Like, I think about some of the titles and I'm like, wow, that's too young. Like, you know, you should not, don't watch like Andromeda Strain at like, you know, 4 years old. Like, don't do that. But I was like obsessed. Like my triumvirate was like Spielberg, Tarantino and Scorsese. Like, and that to this day, that's still like that's my world. And I love them so much.
A sophisticated palette for a 4 year old.
For like a child. For a child. Yeah. But you know, I think if I'm to speak on it honestly, I think what kept me in it and what kept me going, I think that it very, you know, look, all children experience trauma in some way or another. And I think that what theater and what storytelling in general became to me was just a way, when the world was insane, this was how I could control my world. Mm. This was how I could find a story that I could be safe in, and I all of a sudden could determine where this path goes instead of this thing that was shifting. And I think that's to this day, I think this is so often I find that this is the only thing that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Storytelling is the only thing, like, I can't tell you how to be an adult oftentimes, but I can tell you how to write a script. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I think has been a real blessing and a challenge to like to dip my toe out of this and be like, great, cool, you got this. So what else do you need to do to function in this society? And but yeah, I certainly think that's how I got my, if you're asking how I got my start, that's how I got my start. And that's also what kept me in it. Yeah.
That's a really beautiful thought, is that like, this is the place that we can make sense of things. And I think that a lot of people feel that way. And, you know, Sasha, that's similar to like, you were like, I can make sense of this physically, or I can make sense of this through this other character or this play. I think a lot of people feel that way. I think that to me is a very, like, very beautiful, clear way of putting why a lot of people do what we do. I mean, you said you watch a lot of movies, but what got you to, like, switched from like just being interested in Scorsese to like wanting to like do musicals?
The irony is, can I tell you straight up?
Yeah, please.
Not a single thing. So the fact that I am on Broadway right now is fascinating to me. I did not see this coming at all. I sang in rock bands in high school and college. And even so, like, so, you know, so I have a podcast on BPN, and like, that's like what we talk about. Like, half of it's a movie podcast, but half of what we talk about is like the fact that I have any qualification to be on Broadway Podcast Network is like ridiculous. Because yeah, it was more just like when I got out into the auditioning world, I was a Shakespeare major in school. I sang, and they were like, "Cool, let's try some musicals." And I was like, "Okay." And I tried them, and like I did not book most of them. Like it took a very specific musical, like to get me doing musical. And really, like I Sasha, in terms of like Motown, which I think was that your Broadway debut as well?
No, I had done Memphis. That was my first original cast.
There you go. So in terms of Motown, which is how we met, and that's a whole saga in itself. Like I still did not belong there, except for the fact that, because like I couldn't sing, like I mean, or rather, I could not dance like they needed me to dance. I could not dance. I still can't dance. I don't know how to dance. But they needed someone who could act, and they needed someone who could sing high, and I could do those things. So they threw me in, and then I was immediately thrown into this world that was the most period black people period that I've ever seen in my life period. Yep. It was like I was all of a sudden I had to deal with, like, first of all, what it means to be on Broadway, second of all, what it means to be in a musical, third of all, what it means to be in this specific cast with these specific people. Mm. And who did not make it easy on me, because it's those specific people and they know who they are, and so but like it was just this, I mean, it really has been like this game of catch up for me for so you know, so much of it, because I stand in awe of what I see so many musical theater performers do, and I'm just like, like that's amazing, that's incredible. I don't know.
I love musical theater for that though, because it like brings together so many random people who are like, I've never sung a song in my life. What? And I'm like, it doesn't matter. You can dance. You can fit these costumes. Just like sing, 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 sing this note here.
But seriously, that is such an amazing thing that I think people should take in. I think it can be frustrating sometimes, like, mm-hmm. like in a way, like, because we're told to like get a certain way, you have to like train and you have to know the shows and you have to like know the canon and know the history and blah, 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 blah. But that's not necessarily true. It's such a crapshoot that you just have to be right. You just have to be that person that day. And that's it.
And that's such a lesson, because that's the only, at the end of the day, all you have is yourself. That's your only weapon. That's it. You know, whenever people ask me, like, how can I stand out from this? I'm like, that everything you're seeing in the mirror, that's what you got.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only thing you got. So you better love that person, and you better do what you do the best that you can do it. And that's, you know, like, so, cause Ellie, I know, cause you were just doing Beetlejuice, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So me and Brightman have like a script swap that we've been doing, where we like drink and like, swap scripts and like just read. Yep. And what I love about Brightman is just that idea of like, he has, I mean, every script that he writes, it's his world. I mean, you can read these scripts and you're like, oh, that's Brightman. Like that's, it's just so innate to his sense of himself. And I think that is the best, no matter what facet of the entertainment industry you're in, if you know yourself, you're ahead of the game.
Totally.
Just know yourself.
And I feel like I wish that's what led like your education, like back to what we were starting about, is like the rest of this is just suggestion. Like it will be helpful for you to know the canon. It will be helpful for you to know music theory. It will be helpful for you to know these things. But at the very like at the beginning and the end of the day, it's you. And like mm-hmm. the more authentic and more unapologetically you can show up as that person in the room and just like incorporate all these things into you, but you lead. And I think so much of what I felt in my education was figure out who you look like or who you, what type you fit into or mm-hmm. what genre you fit into, instead of just being like, no, just do you. And then like, if you see something that sort of looks like that or echoes that, like, you know, ask questions about it, dive in, like do your research, but... Mm-hmm. But then do you, and then again, do you, like, and I think I lacked that. And I mean, I won't even blame that on like an education or teachers. Like it's just me trying to figure myself out. But I do think that it would be beneficial for students to understand that there literally are no rules. And like all of these other things are truly suggestions.
Yeah. I think we all felt that way. Like, you know, in my experience at OCU is very like classical kind of training. And I thought that because that was the kind of training that I had, that that would be where I would end up. But it turns out I've done everything but anything classical. Like, wow. Yeah. And it's just because who I am as a person is like, you know, cocktails and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just not who I am. I'm not that person. So like what I fit is what actually where I have gone in my career has been actually made more sense with my personality more than my skills.
Agree.
Totally. I think the first time I did a show that I felt like OCU like was preparing me for was maybe My Fair Lady.
And that was like, I mean, what, like, your like seventh Broadway show?
Yeah, like it was like down the line. Yeah. And like I did Sweet Cherry. I've done some things that were like more like along the lines of like more traditional musical theater. That said, the technique, like how to sing, how to dance, like how to technically do those things is very useful. Yeah. But then like the like how that comes out
always
like, later is just like, well, who knows? I don't know. You can sing, you can sing it. Like, is that what you are gonna end up doing? Who knows?
I feel like a more what I wish I had learned more of, and you know, is not just how to sing, but how to sing 8 shows a week. What do you do when you're injured in the middle of a show? How do you get through that? Those are the things that actually you need to know, because those are the things that we end up having to learn on the fly. And some of us learn it on the fly and we're okay and we can learn it, but some of us have to pay a real big cost for that. And it's like, we actually shouldn't have to pay that. Like, athletes know what to do if they get injured. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. So why don't we know what to do if we start to feel a pull on our you know, scaling? I mean, like, we need to, these are basic things that we need to know. And I'm shocked that we don't get taught them.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, like, resources, like, having PT more than twice a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like, Sasha and Caleb, since you all trained in the dance program at OCU, do you feel like you were taught about your bodies as dancers? Because I don't feel like I was taught as how to maintain my instrument as a vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
I agree.
I think that I learned in the dance school, taking the classes that I did, that I did learn a little bit about what to know about my body and when to stop and what to adjust and how to stretch.
I mean, I will definitely say, like, as far as like weight management, like, bullshit, no. Mm-hmm. Screw that, throw it out the window.
What is that? What is, I don't even know what that, what is that? Weight management.
Ooh. Well, this is a podcast.
It's a really
They have very, I will say they have very specific ideas about
image,
body type.
Oh no. And okay. Bye. Nope.
And it's a problem. It's a problem. I've said it. I'll say it all day long. I don't care. Like, I will absolutely say, because it's wrong, and it's very wrong to be talking to young women about their bodies in that way in this day and age. So,
none of that caused is not it.
It's bad.
Yeah.
That said, the technical, like, the things that they do well, and the reason I think it's such a shame that that's such a hallmark of that program, and it is because on the technical side, like, as far as, like, training you as a technical dancer, I don't know another program that does that other than if you were going to go into a ballet or like a conservatory sort of situation. But like, if you're trying to
tap dancing, you're not getting the different
exactly. styles. Like, if you're trying to go be a prima ballerina or a modern dancer specifically, like, there's other programs you could go to. Yeah. But if you're training, there's literally no reason that like our dancers should not be flooding the ensembles of Broadway, because it is that training is insane. It is kept me, I mean, like, the injuries that I have sustained on Broadway are because I wasn't doing what they told me I was supposed to do.
Wow.
Truly. Like, I mean, I've never, like, the 45-50 minute warm up that you do before every single thing, like the requirement, the development of the technique, the system, like between ballet and jazz and tap, like just the culture of it is built to protect you from injury and protect you in the midst. You can use that to protect you in the midst of injury. Wow. The consciousness of your body, awareness. I think an unfortunate thing, again, to bring it back to that weight thing, is that you divorce yourself from your body and like knowing yourself and being proud of it and taking care of it, because there's all this shame around weight. Yeah. And so you can't do both at the same time. You really just, like, a person cannot both be ashamed of their body and in tune with it.
So I think full circle, bring it back to the individual. They don't teach you how to be an individual at OCU. They teach you how to be a Rockette. So yes. They teach you, like, this is how you can be a Rockette, and you will be you'll be amazing. So it's hard to realize at 18, 19, who you are as an individual and how to take what they're saying and how to put it in your own body. Yeah. I think that's awesome. You're young, which is, you have to take everything with a grain of salt.
The people that are able to go and take the kind of, like, Rockette training, but also be like, I'm also an individual, they knew they were an individual before. I don't think there's a lot of, like, cultivating of, like, no, you can be your own kind of dancer.
Yeah, like, definitely.
Unless you knew that already, then I don't think people get that out of the school. And then they are groomed to think it's, you know.
And I mean, it's, like, it's a product tricky. Of a larger thing. Like, it's a product of, like, you know.
We want it to be better.
The artistic director there and everyone else growing up in societies and in businesses that say, like, you should look this way and this is how you work. Like, I think it's a lot of factors, not just like one institution being like, this is what you have to do. I think that ideology is a symptom of a larger thing. And people ask me all the time, like, being a woman or being a woman of color in this business, like, how do you, especially a dancer? And I was like, listen, I've been struggling with that since I decided to do this.
Yep.
And like going to a school that has like a generic look of like, you know, how to show up for a show, which is like red lipstick and curly hair. And I had a perm, which I was already dealing with stuff from, like, you know, Georgia, the South, like telling me that my hair was unruly and I should straighten it chemically. And then I come here, it's like, we used to have curly hair. And I'm like, what kind of curly hair? And like, that curly hair doesn't look like my curly hair. There's all these layers and layers and layers of things. But again, it's just the value of knowing that you have to be yourself and that is the most valuable thing. And you can't underestimate what an act of resistance that can be, depending on what body you find yourself in this life. Truly.
Wow. Wow, guys.
Yeah.
Insanity.
Love that conversation.
Yeah, I love this. Yeah. I'm having so much fun. Right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about Chaos Twins and how that came about. So how did
that
all get started?
How did it come about, Sasha?
Da-na-na. It all started in a little house.
In a little house in Detroit.
Detroit.
So I would say this. Me and Sasha together as friends, because before we were even like actual friends who like hung out and had like a, you know, a banter, there was just an understanding even from afar that like this mixture should not ever happen. Like everyone was like, yo, you and Sasha should not, like, please stay on opposite sides of the theater, please stay on opposite sides of like Times Square.
Like, in the wedding of our friendship, when they're like, does anybody object?
Everybody said.
Everyone was like, I have something to say. There was like a line to the altar.
Everybody
like
said, please don't do this. So during Motown, we did this thing that was so ridiculous. Sasha had left at this point, but then they called her back to.
Yeah. Nick and I have also never spent more than two weeks in a building together, in a cast together.
Yeah.
We've shared two contracts.
Yep.
But only for 2 weeks.
Producers knew.
Leaving Motown, he was coming in, and I was like, oh, what's that guy? And then I came back for like two weeks to cover. Yeah. And it was chaos
because I was a swing on Motown, and that was already a problem because please don't put me in a room and just give me time to like plot and do and plan. Don't do that.
Sure.
Like already that's an issue.
It's bad.
It's so bad. And then Sasha came into the building and like she was understudying. Was it still Morgan James or was Tracy McDowell?
Morgan James. White woman in Motown.
Yep. In Motown. Yikes. And it was great. But she did. I love Morgan. But she had a lot of time off stage. And so we came up with this idea that we wanted to secure the perimeter of the theater.
I don't know know if we came up with it as much as it was something that we became aware of.
Yeah, the perimeter was not secure.
But the perimeter was not secure.
No, we did not feel. I feel like was it after? And I've asked you this before, and I totally forget. Was it after the dude who landed on the building? Was that after? Because that might have been why. I'm just being real.
It was after because.
Yep.
Because I was there when that happened.
Yep. Yes, you were.
And I had left.
Yes, you were.
What happened? A man landed
on the building?
A man. I'm sorry to bring this up. So
I did not have this experience at the lunch. So it was, I want to.
You want to know.
Maybe all paved away, but.
It was in the middle. This is, it's a kind of, I mean, not kind of. It's not a happy story, but.
It's not at all.
It's not at all. But
Cut to tone shift.
Here we go. Okay. Content warning.
We were in the. But this is. It's also very Motown. Like if there was any show that was.
Nick, you're messing it up. We can. We have to give this its weight, and then we can go back. I'm gonna tell it.
You tell it.
Nick can't tell it. He's not responsible enough to do this.
You tell it. I can't tell it.
Basically, there was a rehearsal going on. There was a loud thud. In the lunch, and they didn't know what had happened, and there was all of this, like, you know, okay, well, whatever, you know, keep going. The next day, people who had gotten to the theater early enough, a man had jumped from the W Hotel and committed suicide and landed on the ceiling of the lunch. And they had to, like, because of the building, they had to bring the body down like the stairwell. Really like it was like not a good scene, not a good look.
Yeah.
I would attribute the chaos of the, I mean, like that definitely fits into like just like a lot, but that's a very,
but a very also, different show.
Also, yes. Nick, like let's talk about like Motown was getting edits a year into the run.
Yes. No, that's what I'm saying. There was nothing that felt safe or secure.
It was a crazy place. There were too many people. Like when they put the show on tour, there were like 11 less tracks. Like it was just like a crazy, like you're right. There were a lot of black people in the building, but it was like every person. It was an amazing building to be in because it was like the most talented people of color, like black people on like in the industry.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the voices, I was just like, okay, if I say I'm a singer and Marva Hicks and Ryan Shaw say they're singers, one of us is lying and it's me. It's me. I know who it is. So it was just, there was like all, the height of talent and then like a lot of disarray. There were, I mean, I've never been in a show that experienced that many changes like that.
So that building is cursed.
That building is insane. Also, like, there was an experience of like we had mice in the building and like somebody found like a mouse like eating another mouse. Like they were both dead. And, like, there's just, like crazy things going on all the time.
Same. So y'all were trying to fix building. It.
So we were trying.
We needed to secure the perimeter.
The perimeter needed to secure. So we got costumes, okay, and our costumes.
And by got, we mean assembled.
Assembled. I in every dressing room that I've ever had, and even on tour, I travel with a case full of nerddom, like my comic books. Yeah. My posters, like it truly is just that. That's what I need. That's what I need to feel. I have like my. My Walt Disney World magic band, like it's like all there, and so I had a Wolverine mask there, and I put that on. Sasha put was it a lampshade or was it
no? So I found that later. You had yellow bats. You had yellow plastic bats. Yellow plastic bats in his dressing room. I was in the dressing room hanging out, and I was just like, "What is all this stuff?" And so I just started going through it, and then like we just started assembling things. The lampshade, it was a fringe. Do you remember the costumes for Shotgun?
Yes,
no,
I
you
do.
Don't because we were in silhouette. So nobody remembers them except for the people that saw us backstage. They were these like fringe go-go dresses, like these really cute, like fringe go-go, like white fringe go-go dresses. And we went down to the costume department. In our effort to secure the perimeter, and there was a strip of fringe, and I was like, "Can I have this?" And they said yes, and so then I proceeded to tie it around my face,
and
because I needed a mask too. Nick and I have been wearing masks for seven years,
and I put a flower through the eye socket. And here was the thing: so we first stop was the stage management office, and please keep in mind. This is during the matinee. Like, there's an actual show happening. okay?
Oh my god.
And you're one understudy and one swing come down to the stage management office dressed like this. Not only did our team approve of this, they took pictures of it.
I want Shelly Williams' pictures. Shelly Williams is the associate director, and she has a picture of this somewhere.
Yep.
And in the middle of Shelly Williams, just like honestly associate directing, she was directing the shit out of that show.
Yes.
To her best ability. Like, she also has a picture of the cast. She was also very supportive of the Chaos Twins from early.
In fact, when we announced that we were doing a talk show together, she actually assumed that it was some sort of narrative show about our madness.
Like a web series.
Like a web series. Because we were like, yeah, Shelly, we got to get you on. She's like, I mean, I don't know how I'd be on. Like, I can't, like, what do you want me to do? And we're like, no, it's a talk show. It's not like a, but she assumed that our madness would come up with some sort of.
Definitely, like a whole situation, which it may yet still.
Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, we went to places that we should not have. I will say this. We walked around the building.
The whole building.
Whole building, including the parts of the building where there was a show happening.
The house.
Like, with baseball bats and that's what I'm saying. Like,
no one stopped us.
Not one.
Why would they stop you?
One person stopped us.
They would say, what's going on? We say, we're securing the perimeter. And then they'd say, okay.
Okay.
Okay. And that's how the chaos was. That's the first layer. That was the first layer. The second layer was when we discovered our mutual love of the West Wing.
Oh!
Which was like, that was like a huge discovery. And we started referring to each other as CJ and Josh.
Yep.
Because that's a truly our fit. I mean, I cannot tell you how much I love that show. I know, Sasha, you love that show.
So
and I've never seen it. It's on my list.
You need to watch it now.
I love the newsroom.
Seriously,
it will make you feel. Yeah, it will make you feel so good about like life if you watch it, especially during a time like this. The third
thing for president.
Yeah. Oh, Allison Janney, and she is brilliant. When I say she's brilliant on the show, brilliant.
She's perfect.
It's unspeakable. And then the third thing was our mutual love of activism and of you know, making social justice and getting good word out there. And we had been doing these Instagram lives.
Well, Nick had been doing them. Yeah. Nick had been doing them with like guests, like what, like every 15, 20 minutes you would do them and bring people on. And he was like, Sasha, will you come on? I was like, sure. You know, of course. He specifically asked me if I wanted to troll people online. And I said, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really understand what that meant, but I think I showed up.
You showed up. Yeah. Go ahead. Keep going.
In a Motown shirt.
You showed up with Love Child. On your goddamn.
I turned up with like my Love Child sweatshirt and like sunglasses, and I just started, and I didn't realize like he had been having like some pretty grounded, serious conversations with people about the effects of the pandemic, and I just got on there and just started talking shit.
You just started talking, and like, but like, can I tell you the like the way that the viewership automatically went up once, not even, I mean, yes, with Sasha's presence, but also once people realized what we were doing, that we
everyone's
that we
like, get on this live.
Like, exactly. Somehow walking this tightrope of like being ridiculous, but also talking about real stuff.
Yeah.
And then somehow, I guess, I don't know if Broadway World saw it or what, but then they were like, yeah, do you want to do this on Broadway World? And we were like, okay. And what's messed up to the, again, to this day is like, they really gave us the keys to the kingdom. Like there was no, it's like, yeah, here's our StreamYard account. Like what? We're like,
yeah.
Okay. It literally amplified chaos.
Chaos.
We're still waiting for Broadway Podcast Network to like, you know.
Oh, I've actually had these talks with Britt every day. Like, I'm literally like, yo, why? How are you guys allowing this kind of nonsense to continue on your wonderful podcast network?
Look, there's room for everything. Let's just say that. Yeah.
Apparently no, but yeah, BPN is awesome and Broadway World is awesome, and they gave us a wonderful space to do our thing.
Yeah, it's been a good time, and I think we enjoy like the ability to go between like float between very serious things and very important things, and then just like honestly the chaos of all of it. Like we talked about our show, we're just like this is chaos. This is actual chaos.
Yeah,
there's no other time under which like the Chaos Twins would be brought forth. Yeah. And here we are.
Yeah.
Look, so. This is the one. This is the origin story. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and yeah. I think at our best, I think that what we hope to do is make these subjects less taboo for people to talk about critically, yeah. and approach and find a way in for everybody. A lot of what we talk, just because we are Black people, a lot of what we talk about are Black people issues.
Yeah.
But that realizing that just because of the setup of our country, our issues are American issues, and everybody yeah. needs to be able to talk about it. You know, it's yeah. So I think I hope that we're doing some good. Our guests have been really, truly amazing people, and continue to try to you know, push that envelope a little bit and make some stuff happen. You know, so
yeah. And I think that, you know, what you talk about is making these issues a little less daunting, a little more something that you can listen to. As a white person, it's realizing that a lot of these issues are not just issues of one community, they're everyone's issues, because we all factor in to how everyone lives their lives and is affected in this world. So yeah. when race issues become white people's issues, then I think that's going to be when we make some big, big progress, yeah. because
that collective need to realize good.
Yeah. Realize that we not only are affected by what we already have been taught to do in our lives, just in existing in a structure, but that we can help better lives just by making some changes in our lives that we might not even know about that we need to change. But people need to look inside everyone and figure it out that way.
Figure it out.
We all appreciate that kind of work.
Oh yeah.
We're gonna go to rapid fire segment time. It's time for March Madness. Okay, so I.
Let's talk about that. Good Lord.
So I collect musical theater merchandise, t-shirts specifically, I always have. And so this is a segment where I usually review t-shirts against each other in a versus format and declare a winner. However, in this pandemic where we all want to wear a mask, this is now Mask Madness. So I have two different masks here that I'm going to review. And now I have masks from two different companies. Okay, so this is a mask from the company that I have been using for a while, which is my uncle's company that makes masks. This is a lovely tie-dye. Okay, yeah. It's a really nice color here. Full coverage, so full. That what's nice is I can tuck the fabric underneath my glasses.
No fog.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. I didn't think about that. So that's lovely.
It's full coverage. It's really nice. Nice loose ear loops. Okay. This is good. And it's lined in a color, right? So no stone left unturned. She's tie-dye, and then she's classy. Okay. So we love this mask. Now, we have a different brand. Now, I do have to say, full disclosure, these masks took a full 2 months to get to me. Mm-hmm.
They're busy.
But they donated their they gave you the option to like donate your shipping fee to organizations that need help right now because they took so long. So this Ooh. Is a mask from I don't know the company, but I forget the company honestly, because it took so long. I ordered it and then they just didn't show up.
They get to no love.
I know. But it is a really great mask. It's simple. I like the lining, but what I like most about it is the ear. It's an adjustable
ear.
Mm-hmm. Less flexible. This is more of a like all day mask. Like if I know I need to wear a mask a long time, it's going to be super comfy. So I do have to say that because of the shipping was a real issue on this one. I didn't get it. I ordered it. It took so long to get to me, to the point where I had to like change the address of where it was getting shipped because I was in a different place. But it is the winner of this week's Mask Madness because of the long wear possibilities. This is a mask you can wear all day. It's light. It's not pulling at your ears. There's options to like put an actual filter in the mask if you want to.
Gorgeous. Yes.
And there's wire on the nose, and you can secure it around your nose. No fog. So this unnamed company that I can't remember is the winner of this week's Merch Madness. But they don't deserve the traffic to their page.
Wherever you are.
Don't order it if you don't have 3 months to wait. Okay.
Yeah. And who has 3 months to wait for a mask?
Nobody.
Not I. No. You need to be wearing it right yesterday. Now. Mm-hmm. Speaking of masks, Caleb, one of the most famous mask wearers in the musical theater canon is the Phantom of the Opera. So tell us about the game you have for us today.
So we're going to play really fast. This is called Chandelier, and you don't want to get points in this. And I'm going to say a question, and you're either going to say Nick or Sasha, and Elliot's going to be our breaker, tiebreaker, and whoever has the most points in the end has a chandelier drop on them. Sad story. But we played this with our Phantom of the Opera friends. It was a hit. So ready?
So basically, who's more likely to do whatever?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then you answer for either. Because
you guys have been besties for a while, you should know these things. Maybe. We'll see. Okay. Uh-huh. So who is better at math? Sasha or Nick?
I think I am.
Okay. Sasha. Okay. It's two for Sasha. Okay. Who takes longer in the shower?
Sasha.
Damn it.
Did you agree?
Yes. You see his hair? You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Who is more likely to kill a succulent plant?
Sasha.
Nick. No, Nick.
No, because you, Sasha, if I was to have a plant, I would treat it like a plant and water it like a plant. I wouldn't talk to it like a human being.
Look at my succulents. You don't even have any proof because you killed them all. That's why he has so much resentment against my plants because he killed all of his. But there's my succulent.
This is
another succulent. This is, I propagated this from my grandmother's succulent, her day plant in Macon, Georgia. I brought this from Macon, Georgia.
Okay, so Elliot, who do you vote for?
I gotta agree with Sasha here. I mean,
not
she's the
done. I'm propagating.
So Nick, okay, but that's okay. Fine. Going on, who is more of a heartbreaker? I guess that's two for Sasha.
Yeah. I think we both know the answer.
Okay. Moving on. Okay. Who's more likely to rewatch Tiger King?
Nick.
Yeah.
Okay. Who can hold their breath longer?
Nick.
Yeah.
Okay. And then last question: who is more sentimental?
Nick.
She's not wrong.
Definitely,
Nick. She's not wrong.
2, 4, 6, 8. It looks we have 8 for Nick and 2, 4, 6, 7 for Sasha. So, sorry, Nick, you are the loser in this. The chandelier does drop on you. Sasha, you get by with 1 point.
One.
That makes sense.
One. That's
messed up. We're the twins. We're chaos twins.
We are chaos twins.
Yeah. That was the closest round of chandelier we've ever had.
And with that,
we are going to bring this episode to an end. This was such a pleasure. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
On our show, where can people find you on social media and where can they watch the Chaos Twins?
Go ahead.
Find me at Sasha Hutchings. Mm-hmm.
And you can find me at Nikki Walks. And the Chaos Twins is, right now, it's bi-weekly on Broadway World. And it's on our, we're actually about to, little known secret, about to launch our social media next week.
Yes.
But you can find us on Broadway World. You could also find me at Broadway Podcast Network with my movie podcast, Little Justice. I'll see you around, you know. We'll see each other in passing.
We're out here. Family, we're all working at the Broadway Podcast Network building. You know, our offices are near each other, so we stand around the water cooler, and you know, it's cold.
Exactly.
It's great.
Exactly.
You can find our podcast at Equity One Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and at Equity One _ on Twitter.
You can also talk to us via email at equityonepodcast@gmail.com.
And Ellie, don't forget
to
before they find me, they should go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. It helps us more than you know, and it takes you just a few minutes. Come on. Mm-hmm. I know you've got the minutes. We're in quarantine. Yes. We're all doing the same thing. You can find me at Elliot Maddox on everything. Caleb?
Caleb Dickey, everywhere.
And until next time, cheers!
Cheers! If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.